This is the regular November meeting of the Finance Committee, November 3rd, 2020. Agenda item one, call to order, which I am now doing. Item two, comments from the public. You can do it now or you can do it on an individual item later on. Are there anybody, any comments at the moment?
I don't have any hands raised.
All right, let's go ahead and move to item three, water, sewer, and drainage detailed budget review. Tom, Cindy, who is that?
Me. Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-huh.
All right. So at last finance committee meeting in October, we presented the new format for the budget to actual monthly reporting for security. And the new format, basically, all the columns are still the same as the summary report we report at every board meeting. But the expenditure line items, we broke up, they are broken out by patrol, gate, and admin. So at last the finance committee meeting, we told the committee that we're going to apply the same format to all other reporting units, water, sewer, solid waste, drainage, and admin. So then we did. This memo is to present to the finance committee the new format. So pretty much it's the same for water. All the expenditure line items are broken out by, let me see, by source of supply, water treatment, water transmission and distribution, and administration. For sewer, expenditure line items are broken out by sewer collection, sewer treatment and disposal, and admin. Drainage and solid waste, and historically, there aren't any sub-reporting units, so they're just stay the same. And for admin, the revenue part is still the same, but the expenditure part would all allocate it out to water, sewer, drainage, and solid waste, and security. So that, because we believe in that way, we are presenting the true cost of admin overhead in each reporting unit, in each fund, and furthermore, in each reporting unit. So anybody has any questions? I can answer. I'm here to answer.
Cindy, do you have a sample of it that was part of, is it something they could throw up here so folks could look at it?
Amelia does.
I do. I have to open it. I opened the wrong document. I'm sorry.
So actually, you have already seen it because at last board meeting, I already attached the new format after the budget to actual summary page.
Yeah,
so,
So here it is. And then we just went back to September because we're not done for October with the numbers.
Yes. October is just over. We're still in the process of closing it. So
Amelia, I'm not getting any of the documents in front of me here. I have a big word Zoom in blue that I'm still staring at. Am I not clicking on something? I've never had that happen before.
Is anybody else just seeing Zoom?
No, I'm seeing the document.
Shall I stop sharing and reshare my screen?
Go ahead and try it. Worst case, I've got my, oh, there we go. Okay.
Is that better?
End of problem. Okay.
Perfect.
All right. Are there? I've worked with this, and I like it. I don't have any comments or questions. Anybody?
This is Tom Hennig. I want to thank Cindy. Did a good job putting this together, and it's been a long time coming to clean up our financial reporting to the point where we're able to, at the click of a button on any given month, produce these reports. And in the past, it would take weeks and massive amounts of spreadsheets to validate formulas and calculations. And now it's built into our accounting system, Great Plains, which isn't the best accounting system for a special district, but it certainly works now for our monthly reporting. So I'm very happy that Cindy was able to get to this point. So that's just a comment.
Anybody else? That said, thank you, Cindy. Why don't we move on to one of my favorites. Discuss the timing for the reorganization and renegotiation of the 1988 agreement related to the CIA ditch.
So, John, can I interrupt for just a second, please?
Sure.
I forgot to mention early on that we want to have item number 8, the CFD 2014-1 delinquent bond payment disbursement summary. We want to put that item as close to 10:30 and beyond as possible because we have a consultant, Vanessa Burke, who's going to log in at 10:30 if we have any questions that she needs to answer.
Okay. Yeah, that's no problem. We've got no timed items to worry about here. I have 10:07. So Amelia, just when we get to 10:30, remind me, will you?
Okay.
Okay, let's go ahead, Tom, and do the ditch.
Well, this is a very complicated subject for the district. In 1998, the district had the latest agreement whereby we became the third member of the CIA. And over the years, we've maintained that that's the agreement of record whereby the district is responsible for the maintenance and repair of the CIA ditch, which has been, we didn't want to put something together for this. We just wanted to talk about timing for how things go. But and John Sullivan, I know, is on the line here. But the ditch runs 5.5 miles from when it leaves the Cosumnes River up by the Granlees Dam to where, if there's enough water going through it, it re-enters the Cosumnes River, you know, somewhere south and west of the district offices. About 2.5 miles are our responsibility to maintain and repair. And over the years, it's been a very complicated agreement, made even more complex as staff who were here in 98 retire or move on to other jobs, and staff who then inherit the responsibility for tracking the work and tracking the billing and keeping track of what everybody's supposed to pay, and then doing the transactions between the three entities and the district. And so the financial process has fallen into disrepair, much like sometimes a ditch is in disrepair. And what kind of caught everyone's eye this year was the Lone Pine Drive payment to fix the CIA ditch as it goes under Lone Pine Drive. Right before it enters the Equestrian Center property. And the west side of Lone Pine Drive, or the property line for the equestrian property, is where the district's responsibility of the CIA agreement ends. So as you can see in item number 9, we're spending $27,000+ of district funds for that repair. And again, it's something the district has agreed to many, many years ago. And so it is our obligation to fulfill our requirement in the agreement. But there's been a lot of discussion lately as to, is this really the best interest of the district to be engaged in this agreement going forward? And so I think it's a good opportunity to dust off the 98 agreement, kind of check out the current environment and see if we should revise this, if we should create a whole new agreement, if, you know, what our options are. And it's not simple. So the agreement itself has sort of a every 5 year renegotiation clause in it, which has never been renegotiated as far as I know. And as soon as John Sullivan raises his hand, Amelia, break into what I'm talking about. But so
Tom, I'm on here.
Okay, so the board asked me to bring this item forward, and here we are in November, you know, so we got about 5 months if we want to kind of meet a March deadline, or maybe we set a deadline for by the time we do the budget next year or July. But I just wanted the board to have the discussion, and then this committee to have the discussions, because it's more of a financial obligation than anything else, and kind of get your thoughts on what your expectations are, so I can start getting staff involved in coming up with solutions or ideas. So that's my speech.
John, did you have a comment?
Yeah, as I said in our previous meeting a month ago, it's a good time to talk about it, because we have all these other interweaving agreements as to, you know, RMA and water quality at Laguna Joaquin and the way the ditch was operated in the past, and the changes that have come about because of the way the ranch is run. And so, yeah, this is a good time. I would hope that we can continue, John, you could continue with Tom to meet and discuss the district's thoughts going forward on what they'd like to see, and we're amenable to that. I think there will be a much better understanding if we can have a good focus by a board member and the general manager. And the reason I say that is because at the end of the day, there's two things being dealt with. One of them is the protection of the water right, and CIA has its own. And the other thing is that, you know, there are riparian lands and infrastructure that the districts used to convey water to users who aren't CIA members. And I think there has to be a rational approach to that, and we're all for it. Let's talk about the district's needs. I've done a lot of thinking about, you know, what the district's needs are. And, you know, from my perspective, if we would have been handling the conveyance appropriately, and the district would be charging appropriately for the water that the district conveys through the ditch, I don't think it would be as much of a financial burden as it seems like it is right now. And so let's get all that cleared up too. And we're amenable to sitting down and talking. I think everybody, now that we've toured the ditch and even the parts that aren't the district's maintenance responsibility west of Lone Pine, I think Tom and John, you have seen the width and breadth of what gets serviced by the ditch, and it's quite extensive.
Yeah, I agree. There's a couple of things, Tom, that I want to do as part of the process. First, I wanted to mention too that we have, you know, obligations and needs on the front end of this that include both the dam and the forebay. So when we talk about the ditch, we're really not just talking about, you know, the trench and the tunnel underground and above ground that now runs down to Laguna Joaquin and onto Carroll's property. The other thing I really want to get comfortable with is the accounting. Like you said, it's complicated. I haven't seen enough of it yet that I'm really comfortable with it. I want to know pretty much what our overall financial responsibility is on an annual basis. We want to look at some of the capital improvements down the road that we're going to have to do, whether that be with the dam, with the guniting of the walls of the ditch, the potential of going underneath the road again, which is, as we know from what we're about to do later on, very expensive. So yeah, I guess it's an ongoing conversation, and I agree, I'd certainly like to get somewhere with it so it can be considered accurately in our next budgeting process. And maybe the other part of that is to do an interim review with Dick Shanahan too, to find out legally what it says and what his views on it are. So that's all I have. Anybody else, any comments?
Yeah, John, this is Tim. I agree. I don't like putting deadlines, but in this case, I would put for the negotiations that it's done, said, agreed upon for our fiscal process for the next fiscal budget. So, Tom, you know the timelines that we have to work backwards for on that. We have probably another couple months, and then we're starting to look at the fiscal budgetary process for the upcoming year. The only thing I would add, John, is we're probably going to need maybe a rep from, and obviously Paul be involved in these talks, but from the improvements committee, because some of the things you just talked about on capital improvement, we need to get a good history of what the district's been doing. So I think it's going to touch the improvements committee a little bit. So I don't know, as we go into these formal talks, obviously I agree with you, John, with your history and understanding of the ditch. And maybe we reach out to one of the two directors that are responsible for improvements committee and bring them on board for the talks as well. Just my thoughts initially.
We'd be good with that.
Yeah, and that would be helpful anyway, Tim, because I think part of this is really understanding down the road, you know, exactly what those financial obligations are. You know, and John particularly is well aware of what kind of upgrades and fixes and modifications we have to make. We have to put some numbers to those to see financially what that looks like. So yeah, I agree. I don't see any problem at all in routing it that way. The other part of that, like I said too, is really understanding what the accounting looks like. And we're just starting to get into that now to really understand it. So yeah, so we'll bring this up now and again and report on it. And like Tim said, we'll shoot for, you know, trying to get something resolved by the time we go into our formulation of next year's budget.
Perfect. Tom, would you, it'll probably go out through Amelia, but would you formally request one of the two directors, and then we'll just put it back to you, Tom, under the manager's reports for you to start the process and, you know, figure out the calendar and all those things. And then that way you can coordinate between really the two committees, if you will. And then, as you said, John, as the talks continue, then we can just have the GM report out until we get to a point where, you know, we're going to get a formal agreement. And that's with the input of legal counsel. And then obviously it would be a closed session item for the negotiations, but we're a ways out from there. Thank you.
Understood. And we'll handle it that way.
I don't have any hands raised.
Did we lose Mr. Merchant? John, you're on mute.
There he is.
There he is, he's muted.
John, can you unmute yourself?
Oh, how's that? Does that work? Okay, I said we still have 10 minutes before 10:30. So yeah, Tom, why don't you take this? I read this thing. It's pretty thorough. Go ahead.
So SB 998, Amelia's done a ton of work on this. And Amelia, do you want to talk about the history and how we got to where we're at?
Yeah, SB 998 is a Senate bill, 998, that was enacted. And it basically says that urban and community water district systems like we are need to have a policy in place for shutting off water, residential water, and that that policy has to be translated into English and a total of five languages for us, one of which is English. And then if we had at least 10% of the population of our community that spoke a language other than English or one of those other four languages, we'd have to translate it into that language as well. So the policy has to include these items: a plan for deferred or reduced payment, alternative payment schedule, a formal mechanism for a customer to contest or appeal a bill, a telephone number for customers to contact us to discuss options for averting disconnection of residential service for non-payment. And the policy has to be available on our website, which we have a website, so we don't have to worry about that. We've worked a lot with our legal counsel, Dick Shanahan and his office, to help us with the policy. And we have attached the policy here. If the committee approves the new policy, we'd like to take it to the board and institute it at the November 18th board meeting. There are some changes that we have to make to the internal workings of how we bill. For example, instead of having a 45-day grace period to consider bill delinquent and consider shutting off the water, it has to be moved to 60 days. That's part of the wording of this new bill. We have to have a payment agreement that is on all of this is detailed in the policy itself. So there's a new payment agreement that will go into effect. And on the 3-day notices that we hang on the doors, the notice and the format of the notice will have to change. It'll have to have more information on both the 10-day notice and the 3-day notice. And then there's a formal appeals process that's in here now. In addition, there are certain circumstances that we cannot shut off a resident's water. Any member of the customer's household is a current recipient of CalWORKs, CalFresh, General Assistance, Medi-Cal, Supplementary Security Income, State Supplementary Payment Program, or California Special Supplementary Nutrition Program, Women's, Infants, and Children. Or the customer declares that the household's annual income is less than 200% of the federal poverty fee. So that's now part of the, if it's approved, part of this policy. And to reinstate the water, if it has been shut off, it has to be $50 for those folks who fall within these categories.
So, Amelia, if I may chime in real quick, the requirement to adhere to SB 998 started coming around towards the end of the last calendar year. And we had initiated to beginning to work on this, and then COVID hit. And it's one of the things that has been on our back burner ever since. And I applaud Amelia for putting this together and working with Mr. Shanahan's office to get it to this point in time to where we can bring it forward for formal approval. And the timing is good because at the October board meeting, we talked about going back to charging penalties and interest as incentives for people to pay their water bills, as the number of unpaid water bills has grown to a noticeable number. So at this point in time, we can activate this new process and also really start working with all the unpaid bill residences to see what we can do about getting them back into gear. We already, Liz up front is constantly calling or working regularly on contacting the customers and trying to work out pay agreements and so on and so forth. So the timing on this is good. It's unfortunate that we're late, but we've not had any complaints that people can't understand our statements and such as that. So Rancho Marietta is very unique in its makeup. So, but we will follow the state law and we will get this put together and for the board packet this month. That's all I have.
Tom or Amelia, do we have any responsibility to or any legal requirement to communicate this in a specific way to the ratepayers? or how do we plan to do that?
Well, we plan to put it in the pipeline. As you know, we'll probably put it in the pipeline in December. We may put it in the pipeline in November. Depends on how full the pipeline is for November.
Okay. No, I was just curious if we had any specific requirement to notify anyone or everyone in a specific way.
The only thing that I can remember seeing, and I've only read it like 12 times, was that it has to be posted on our internet website, and I'll put that in with pay my bill. So it's an obvious, you know, progression to that. And then there are specific notifications with our 10-day notice and our 3-day notice that have to include more information and different information on those notices.
Right. Okay. Any public comment or any questions on this item? So Tom, is this the point you want to move on to do the bond payment item?
I can give the Lagoon Joaquin update in 2 or 3 minutes, then we'll open up, then we'll skip to number 8.
Okay.
And then, so is it the will of the committee that we move this to the board?
Yes, mine. Tim, is that okay?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Are you ready, John?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the Laguna Joaquin update is kind of a fluid situation. Earlier today at the Improvements Committee meeting, I reported out that we had not received any proposals to help us solve the Laguna Joaquin problem, and that we were going to reach out to some parties that seemed interested as to why they didn't turn their proposal in on time. And Paul was on top of it, and right away he sent out to one of the folks that we had spent probably an hour on the phone with a couple weeks ago. And they told us they thought the deadline was November 9th instead of November 2nd. November 2nd. I'm looking at the wrong calendar, November 2nd. And I know they put a lot of time and effort into thinking about this. So what I was trying to do is get something in time to take it to the board as a proposed agreement. But if I move the deadline out a couple weeks to November 17th, we can at least report to the board what we know. I can report it in the general manager report, what we know about proposals received. And we're going to reach out to the couple other agencies that had talked to us about it and let them know that we've extended the deadline by 15 days. And so that's my report on Laguna Joaquin. So it's a lot more positive than saying, oh, we got to rework the RFP and start all over again, for that matter. So I'm happy to say that we're in a better place than we were like an hour and a half ago.
Okay. Any other comments on item number 6? Any questions?
The only comment is, Tom, just understand, as a board, we've committed to a multi-fiscal year process. So again, as this moves along, it's not like we have to get it done this fiscal period. But I think as we formalize this, we extend it out to 15 days. Don't feel that there's artificial deadlines on us that we have to meet, because we just know it is going to be a multi-year process, whatever the game plan is going to be. So no worries.
Well, and thank you for that, Tim. The urgency I have is, I think there's going to be some complexities as to A, how it gets paid for, because the RFP was put out without having a budget to pay for whatever responses come back at what cost it might take. The idea is, I'm working with Kevin with the RMA, and also we're going to work with the Town Home Association to discuss a 1/3 share of the cost of whatever is eventually going to be the work, because we don't even know what the work is going to be yet. So we think we're going to get a time and materials quote from a company who thinks they need about this much time to get the work done. We won't know for sure until we see it. And so we're going to have to find a way to pay for that. So Kevin and I talked about, let's do a share. And share what we have to figure out what is, because we don't know how much money this is going to cost. And that's just to do the analysis and hear what the recommendations will be. But as I told the improvements committee earlier, the people Paul and I talked to seem to think this is a solvable problem, and it's not insurmountable. If dredging Laguna Joaquin would be the best thing in the world, probably, and get a fresh start. And then people 50 years from now can solve the problem then. But there are short-term or valid fixes that don't involve dredging. So it's a good project for us to spend time on. And I'd like to get it done before the midge flies start appearing next, late spring, early summer. And to tell you what I said before, I don't expect the district to be paying for any of the treatments next year. I think we kind of created a quagmire in picking up that responsibility a few years ago, and I just don't see it's in the interest of the district to do so going forward.
Tom, the only other consideration as you go through this costing and your discussions with the RMA, I don't know how long we continue to do it this way, or if it's a long-term part of the fix, but you know, we're running at the present time, we've run Clemencia water down through the ditch and over to freshen Laguna Joaquin. And, you know, there's a raw water charge associated with that and probably some offsetting small piece of actual ditch costs that might be built into that. But if we're having sharing discussions and this continues to be part of the fix, you might want to talk to Kevin about that as to how we offset that cost.
Agreed.
Okay, anything else? Do you want to move down then, Tom, to your number 8 item and then come back and get number 7?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Okay, so as
Vanessa is joining us just this minute.
Okay, thank you, Amelia. So we reported out that, and I think a number of times over the past few months, that in September, we became aware that the landowner who's responsible to send the bond payments for the bondholders for the Melrose CFD 2014-1 bond, was delinquent on a number of the parcels. And we discovered this because as we were getting ready to send money to Wilmington Trust, who then sends payments out to the people who bought the bonds, they'd requested that we send money, but we didn't really have it. And so I asked Ms. Burke, who has a lot of experience with communities who go out and get Melrose bonds and then have to manage the payments to the people who buy the bonds. I had her look into it, and it came up that we ended up sending a demand letter to the landowner for $851,000 in September and basically saying, if we don't receive this money by next Tuesday, we're gonna initiate foreclosure proceedings on the properties that are in question. And this is 4 or 5 properties, mostly around the lakes that they stop making payments to. And so they quickly got the money together and gave us a check, and we put it into El Dorado Savings, our checking account there, our savings account there. And then we were left with the dilemma of what to do with the money, because the money included charges for the principal that was unpaid, the interest that was unpaid, but also an analysis that the district unknowingly had been loaning money to the landowner to make the bond payments. And if you'll scroll down a little bit, Amelia. The chart here shows you from 2014-15 to current, the payments that were required to be made to Wilmington Trust for their reimbursement to the bondholders. The first 3 years of payments were pre-funded through the bond sale, so that the 154, the 130, the 130, those payments were made, and there should be a column there that says two payments of 130,000, two payments of 130,000 during those 15, 16, and 16, 17. But those were pre-funded in the bond. By the time 17, 18 came around, the 16, 17 number, by the time that came around and Wilmington was asking for monies to be paid, the district paid the money to Wilmington without confirming that we'd received all the money from the landowners through the county. So let's step back just a second and I'll explain how this happens. And anybody has a question anytime, they can stop me. So in 2013, the district entered into an agreement with the landowners to issue a Mellow Ruse initiative that was approved by the voters, which was a small group of landowners. And so they borrowed, they issued bonds in the amount of $5.9 million, basically. And how that happens is then the landowner starts paying taxes, a direct levy taxes on the property, which the county then sends to the district. The district takes those monies and ships the money to Wilmington. And this is all overseen by a company called National Bond Services, who is sort of the bond administrator. And all the while the landowner wasn't making payments, they were telling National Bond Services, hey, here's a report that says we didn't make the payment on these properties. And so they're filing their reports as they're supposed to be, but the district, we, at this point in time, it's me, is not picking up on the message. So we ended up spending, and if you scroll down, Amelia, to the table with the blue in it, we ended up spending in 2016, and I'm gonna go slow so I don't get it wrong, we spent $72,000 of district money to help make the bond payments. In 2017, 2018, we spent nearly $300,000 in district funds. And these are, this, there's nothing illegal about this. It's just bad bookkeeping on our part, on my part. As the GM, I gotta take I'm taking responsibility for this, but it's basically we're loaning the landowner money. And at the end of the day, you'll see that we charged the landowner interest and we also charged them penalties, which is part of this discussion. But as you can see, scroll down a little bit more, Amelia. We paid a total of $543,000 in district money in basically a loan to the landowner to help fund the bond payments, the bond obligations. And when you charge interest on that, and what we charged is we compounded interest at the rate we received from our local agency investment fund, the state reserve fund that we invest money into, and we charged their rate of interest. So we earned on the money we loaned the landowner $28,000 in interest. So that money comes back to the district and it's actually a better rate of interest than we get from El Dorado Savings. So when all is said and done, the district is made whole. And the bond is made whole because now that the payments have been made, and it's my understanding that the landowner is now being current on all their payments to the county that then will end up with Wilmington Trust for them to make the bond payments. Now, before we just took the $851,000 and sent it to Wilmington, we needed to do this spreadsheet to really understand what we're supposed to do. So what we need to do now, and this is what we're recommending, is we need to pay the district back the money that was loaned to the landowner. Yes, that's the first step. And the second step is to send the money to Wilmington Trust to replenish the bond reserve fund, which was used to make the payment in September. So let me kind of give a sidebar on that. When we were supposed to send the money to Wilmington in September, they started sending us demand letters. And that's when we realized we had a problem. That's when we sent them a letter, said, we're not sending you money. You have to use the reserve funds to make the bond payment. So that triggers a number of different items. It creates what's considered a material incident in that the landowners had to use reserve fund to make the bond payments in September. So that gets filed on these National Bond Service websites and local bond, California Bond Service website to let anybody who owns these bonds, which I believe are tax-free bonds, where you earn a preset amount of interest. So the people who own the bonds and the people who are thinking about buying the bonds can go to the website. Aha, there's a material weakness here that we need to be considering if we're going to invest our money in this. Because the last thing you want to do is buy bonds that eventually become junk bonds, meaning that when you foreclose on the property, it's not worth money to even pay for the bond. So while that's not the case out here, it is the case in certain, you know, it does happen. So the next amount of money, so after we pay back the reserve amount, then we go to we pay the district the administrative fee assessed and collected for the use in administering the CFD. And then last, any excess funds from penalties and fees will be placed in the Wilmington Trust under the terms of the bond agreement as required, or the district's general fund. And it appears we have the option of placing, what is the balance? Keep going down, Amelia, now. So here's that action. We collected the 851, and then we repay the CFD, the 183, and then we repay the district, the 543, plus we get interest, so a payment of the district to the district of $571,000 to make our account whole. That leaves $93,000 in penalties, and I think that's pure penalties, of money that is available to the district, I believe either to put into our general fund, or we can send it to Wilmington Trust and have it sit there in case there's problems in the future with the landowner making bond payments on time. So that's the complete accounting. We're still working with National Bond Services and Wilmington Trust to confirm or not that the $93,000 is available for us to put into our general fund, identify how we want to spend it, or we could just leave it there, or send it to Wilmington to let it sit there. So I think in a week or so, definitely before the board meeting, I will have a definitive answer. And prior to the board meeting, I expect to have a definitive answer and maybe come forward with a plan, a recommendation. And that is the sum total of this discussion at this point in time. We have Vanessa Burke on the line, who's extremely knowledgeable on how these bonds work. If there's somebody asks a question, I can't answer. So
good morning.
I'm opening it up to questions, comments.
Tom, I'll go first. Thank you. Because I know that we inherited this in the transition. So I think it's well put together. It's very understandable. I think, like you said, as we get ready for the board meeting, once we know the last best information, then that's when we can move it to the board. Doesn't have to be an action item. It can just be a report out in the manager's report on this. And then, like I said, the big question is the question you just have to ask. We'll get that in the next week or so. And then that'll be able to give the board members an opportunity to make a decision on what they want to have happen with the 97,000, and we can move forward and really just kind of close it out and move forward from this standpoint. Please thank all of staff that worked on it. Well done.
Hey, Tom, is it clear now that we have options on the 97,000? I mean, are we free and clear to make a determination as to any of those placements of those funds we want to make?
I am not crystal clear on that, but I would ask, this is why I asked Vanessa to get on the line, because she's more expert at this than me. I'm waiting to hear from NBS and Wilmington, because we asked them that exact question. But Vanessa, do you want to make any comments?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit about it. Can everybody hear me okay? I'm in my car.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay, good. So you know, you have to get back to kind of what is that remaining balance that's there and how was it derived? And when you actually look at the cash flow stream, we know the principal and interest is all clear. So that's really the what I would call the penalty and interest piece related to the defaulted payments by the developer. And so what I was unclear of and what I've asked Tom to clarify with NBS is, one, does that have to remain in the CFD? And I think we know that it doesn't, but I think you have the option to put it in the surplus fund for the CFD for bond payment. What I wanted to verify was, can some of that come back to the general fund in the event that you had a need for a one-time need there? And I believe if it does come back, it does have to be, my understanding of the CFDs is it does have to be committed to capital projects. So that's the verification legally that needs to happen. I haven't had this situation before. This is, though there have been defaults, we haven't had, often they're small, they're not of this size. So this is the first time I've had to deal with where that remaining surplus goes. But I think there are some rules that'll govern it, and we'll have more information by the next meeting for the staff report.
Yeah, Tom, there's a couple of things here, and I was in on all of those calls with the administrator and with Wilmington, and one of the things, I'm not sure if we've explained it at this point or not, that the current arrangement now takes us out of the middle as money coming directly to us and then going back across, that there's going to be a direct exchange between the county and the administrator. You want to explain that again?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. So when we put this bond together, there's a whole bunch of people involved, but the primary players are the landowner who wants to borrow all the money, and in this case, it was to pay for one third of the water treatment plant, which expanded the capacity of our water treatment provision. And that's the first member. The second member is us being the governmental agency, the next player being the bond manager or the administrator, and that's National Bond Services. They're supposed to be paying attention to all this stuff for us. And last but not least is Wilmington Trust, who takes the money, they invest it in a variety of ways, but they also make payments to the bondholders who get, when you buy these bonds, you get annual or twice annual payments on the money it earns. And I cannot tell you why we didn't do this in the first place, but going forward, NBS, as this process, tells the county how much to collect and what addresses to collect the money from. You get your, everybody who gets a tax statement, you look at all those other things you have to pay for, and some of them, I don't know what you guys have out here, but you probably have a Melrose bond in there, or a school bond in there, or a water bond in there someplace that you're paying annually on your tax bill. I know we just got ours in Placer, and we have like six things on ours that are other than the property tax. And so NBS tells the county, and the county then sends us the money along with reports, and then we're supposed to understand that and then send the money to Wilmington. What we're going to do going forward, and this has already been, I think, completely arranged or worked out, is NBS tells the county how much money to collect. The county will then send the money to Wilmington, and the county will also send a report to NBS, who will then go through the list of all these addresses and say, okay, these five addresses didn't make their tax payment. And then they can tell us, and we can decide what to do. And that simplifies things. It's really critical to note that in 2015, when the bond was actually funded, January 15, that there were nine properties, all these big swaths of land that are owned by Murrieta Properties and a variety of other LLCs. And since that time, one large property, the Gardens, has been subdivided into 78 homes, a hotel, 15 businesses, a Bel Air. And so it becomes more and more complicated as you start trying to match up these addresses or APNs to the payments. And NBS is really good at that. And we are obviously not good at that. So we're gonna stick to providing clean water and treating it correctly and And we're going to let NBS do the job that we actually are paying them to do. So why we don't have NBS doing this all along, I don't know. But going forward, I can tell you that we're going to be hands off unless there's a problem. Does that answer your question, John?
Yeah, it does. Part of being as involved in this as I got, okay, there were two numbers. One fits inside of the other, and one is $851,000, and the other is $543,000. That's part of it. And in the beginning of this, you know, I will frankly admit how scary it was, because quite honestly, you know, I got trained at CBS for many years, and I thought I understood a lot of this. I didn't know where the hell this money was, where it was supposed to go, who had it. And it, you know, what concerns me as part of Belarus is that ultimately, as this, you know, service that we provide through the legislation that created it, ultimately, you know, as we facilitate development by getting involved in these things, we're also, the bottom line liability comes back to us. And I understand that we have leverage that we exercised in threatening foreclosure to collect a payment. But if that had not been the case, you know, we then put on our back the obligation of taking on the legal responsibility of executing that and trying to collect our money. And I'm not sure the inner workings of this. I'm wondering why in any way, shape, or form, as development comes to us, we feel obligated to assume liability and act as a semi or a partial bank. I would really like with Dick at some point to sit down and fully understand what our outside liabilities are every time we exercise one of these. Now, there's two of them that I remember. We had one on the south and we have this one. But going forward, I really want to understand from a liability standpoint, as we execute these deals for millions of dollars and we have 2,800 ratepayers and a $7 million annual budget, how much liability are we really assuming? And is it necessary or is it smart? So those are questions we can answer. I mean, we're in this one, but I'd like some of those answered going forward, because I got in the middle of this and frankly, I was not comfortable. I mean, I didn't know what the hell we were doing. And the bank and the administrator seemed to kind of know what we were doing. But then there was a mixed up relationship where we're in the middle and we're funneling money from the county to us and then over to the administrator and then over to Wilmington Trust. And in the end, we find out, well, we really don't need to do that at all. So I'm just not yet comfortable. I know we've cleaned up the accounting. And yeah, we inherited some of this, and we inherited it through some personnel issues and some turnover and transition, where by the time we got new folks in place, nobody really understood what we were doing, me included.
Well, so, you know, John, it's important because, you know, we have board members that are going to be here for another 4 years. And these are great discussions because, and we'll have this discussion at the board meeting, but your first concern about the district's obligation, Vanessa Burke just had chatted that she can comment on that. And I don't think we're in as much obligation or liability as you're thinking. Vanessa, could you please unmute yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. The first thing just to kind of understand is this CFD is issued under Belarus. And what that does is it provides a district or a city or a local agency in order to issue those bonds. But there is, these are considered, you know, you're not obligated to pay on the bonds. as a district. There, it, the CFD is actually a separately incorporated legal entity. You are only the administrator, and you outsource that administration essentially to MBS. And because you issue bonds, there's always a bond trustee that represents the interests of the bondholders. So you as a district, if you go back in time to that first year where you gave $72,000, you were never obligated at any of those points in time to cover the shortfall in the debt for that developer. The developer is the only one on the hook to make those payments. You're just essentially helping them to issue the debt, build the water treatment plant. They ultimately benefit as they sell off their properties for, you know, commercial or residential development later. So you're really just serving the benefit to ensure that those lots are serviced by water, sewer, yada, yada. They are technically the obligor on the bonds. And I believe if you were to even go back to the original issuance statement, you would see that there is no backing by the district. So you've done a favor. However, I would encourage you not to make payments towards defaulted debt in this circumstance because it can set precedents. So there's also this corresponding moral obligation. Do you have a moral obligation to pay it? You don't, but the question becomes, did you do that as a, you know, moral obligation? But the moral obligations are not contractual. So I'm not a lawyer, I'm an accountant, I'm an auditor, and I know I saw this back when we delivered our report to you. This is the debt service side, and I think that the steps that have been taken to monitor and go forward, even if you do outsource 100% of the function, is now set in place. So I would not encourage you to make those payments. I would encourage you to go through the debt process, which is you use the bond reserves first. And then if it goes into default, the district's only obligation is to go through the process you just did, which is a judicial foreclosure process on the line, on the land.
So Vanessa, let me ask you then, as which was where I was kind of going with this, was in exercising that process, that can either be, you know, easy or hard or expensive or not. Where, you know, are we acting when we make that move to foreclose, are we acting as the CSD or are we acting as the CFD, which is the bond itself? I mean, the reason I ask that is, what if it costs us ultimately $750,000 in fees to foreclose on the property?
I agree. I believe you're acting as the CFD in that case, because even though you're all appointed as the officers of that CFD, I believe that process occurs through the CFD, and how you pay for that legal gets into details on litigation that would be well beyond my scope, and we would get Dick involved at that point. You know, does the general fund have to defend that litigation or any kind of pursuit against those properties? I think it's probably that's worth a conversation with Dick, just to make sure you guys understand your rights and responsibility under the CFD and then under the district.
Yeah, it was and part of that, I guess where I'm drilling down to is really understanding that by executing or entering into any kind of a Mello-Roos arrangement, and I understand that these are in use far and wide and generally accepted methods of financing, but you know, we are not, as you can look up to the north of us, we are not, you know, the city of Folsom here. And I just wonder, you know, on the bottom line, what kind of liability we create for ourselves every time we get ourselves into a multi-million dollar deal.
Well, John, this is Tim. I agree. I think we've got this cleaned up. Vanessa, thank you for the background information. It really helps. I think a couple of things, John. I'm one that feels very comfortable not knowing what's going on. That's just my nature. But I agree with you. We were faced with something that I don't think the district has been faced with in the past. So I think this is a one-off. Obviously, if we have something like this in the future, we have a much better understanding of where we're going. So I think probably just to kind of close this out, if you feel comfortable, John, is really just Tom, put it on your general manager's report and we can address it from that standpoint.
Okay.
I'm fine at this point. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I got, oh, there we are. Now my screen's back where it should be.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was.
Yeah. Like I said, I just want to have a chat with Dick or somebody at some point just to make sure that I am and anybody else who feels likewise is comfortable that we understand the process and we know what we're doing. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, I never want to do this again. That's not what I had in mind. I just want to really understand it, because I got in the middle of it, and I'll be honest with you, there was a point there where I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. But we did figure it out. And Tom and Cindy and Michelle really did a good job. It was a really, really complicated exercise.
So why don't we do this, John, if you're okay with it. Tom, would you just put a side note so that when we get a couple of items of note that we need to go into closed session with, that we would add this into the closed session with Mr. Shanahan and have that discussion and close this out then. And again, it doesn't have to be this board meeting or next, but as we get close to having a closed session, maybe we put this on as one of the agendized items and then we can close it out.
Well, Tim, I'd like to make a couple comments and then maybe you might adjust your request. I do believe that Wilmington is going to be demanding we send them money shortly. I think they have to make a payment out in December. So with the general manager report, I can summarize what we've done and that we've transferred the money per this agreement, also addressing what we did with the 73 grand. Is that the right number? 97 grand.
Right.
And then I'll work with, again, NBS Wilmington, and then go to Dick Shanahan with the summary of all this and get him to chime in on what our options are. And then either based upon his recommendation, come to the November board meeting with an agenda item, or put it in the general manager report and then come to December with an agenda item or not. But I do think we need to move the funds as they're described here, with the exception of the 97,000, we can leave that in our account for now. But I do not want that Wilmington to start sending us demand letters and making a little bit more of a cloud of confusion with what the bondholders might be perceiving. So if it's all right with you, we'll make these changes with the exception of the 97,000, you know, these transfers, and continue on with confirming that from this point forward, the money is going to go from the county directly to Wilmington Trust, and at that point in time, be monitored by NBS, whereby we just deal with the problems and not the whole process. Are you okay with that?
Oh, makes perfect sense to me, John.
Yes, completely. I'm fine with that.
All right.
Thanks, Tom.
Any other questions out there?
Thank you all. I'm going to drop, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Vanessa.
So we can we want to circle back at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Want to go back to the agenda, Amelia?
I buried my agenda with something.
Okay. There we go. So I guess we need seven, the timing for reserve study and engineering services RFPs.
And I'm just looking for a little bit of discussion on this. We already announced in the improvements committee this morning that over the next few weeks, we're going to release an RFP for engineering services. And that's really more of a improvements committee role anyway, because that's what all that's about. But for the reserve study, it was stated as the number one goal of the board back in the spring. And then we, then COVID hit and we did those changes to the rates to lessen the amount of funds we collect that, you know, ideally we need to build our reserves. So we decided to fund a reserve study, which hasn't been done for a while. And I think I want to just kind of get an idea of what you're thinking is on how soon you want to start talking about awarding a reserve study contract, and when do you want to have a reserve study in front of you? Do you want to have it in front of you before we do our Prop 218 notice? I believe that's March or April. Do you want to have it in January? Would you rather have it closer to the final budget process when we're actually dealing with the last and greatest rate changes? What are your thoughts?
Mine is, you know, if it's not a tremendous impact on manpower, because we've got, you know, too many balls in the air as it is, I'd like to get started on it, especially if the majority of the lifting is going to be done by the consultant. And I would like to have it at the beginning of the budget process, because without it, I don't know how you really creatively put the whole thing together. I mean, if you just spring the number, assuming that this is gonna ultimately wind up in some kind of an increase, and I've got another point I'll make later on that. If that's the case, or we anticipate that's the case, along with the security stuff we're doing, the security tax, et cetera, the earlier we get it, the better, so that we have an understanding, at least of from a rate standpoint, what we need to do.
Okay, then I'll make the statement and I'll put it in my report. We'll release the RFP for the reserve study in December.
Well, Tim, what do you think? What do you want to do here?
I think a couple of things. I agree with what you said, John. If in fact, Tom, we're able to push a majority of this onto the consultant, then fantastic. This is an item that is number one. It still hasn't been knocked off the charts as a number one item. So if we were to put deadlines on ourselves, especially for the upcoming fiscal period, this would be one of those that is probably going to move to the top. And again, Tom, as you and I have talked, if there are items that need to take a back seat, please come to the board and have us assist in those decisions. But so far, your decision making for the priority items is spot on. So I'm comfortable with that. But this is that one item that just still has not moved, because we just don't know. And not knowing as we go into another fiscal period just sets us back that much further.
Okay, and you're right. A lot of the heavy lifting is being done, that we have to do, is being done because we're providing all of our financial information to our auditor. The big elephant in the room here is creating a 100% fixed asset list. And the previous fixed asset list used for the last reserve study, you can go down and cross off many, many items that no longer have value or aren't even here in the district. So my opinion, and I've done these types of studies before, not to the depth that we do have fixed assets here in the district, but it's going to take a while to make sure that all the parts and pieces and fixed assets we have out there, that we account for them correctly, and that we don't account for things that we no longer have or no longer need. So our heavy lifting is that process, and I'm going to sit down with Paul and maybe this, we hire somebody specifically to do this for a month in time, who is retired annuitant or is an intern or something like that. So let's proceed. Let me do my homework, and I'll put it in the manager's report this coming on the 18th. Okay.
Tom, part of that part of that, and it's nothing we can do it in parallel almost to doing the study, is I'd like to understand with the delinquent money that's out of Teeter, that's down at the county, that relates to the landholder. As I understand it, what's left down there now is money that is directly owed to us, in that it's past due payments for security and drainage fees. There's also some other property tax delinquencies, and there was talk down there that they were going to work out some kind of a payment schedule. One of the discussions I think we want to have at the board is, and I'm thinking that number is 750,000, but we need to clarify that. That going forward, if there's a payment plan coming out of this, or a way that we get that money released to us, maybe we have a discussion that money is directly headed towards water, sewer, and drainage reserves, which might take some of the overall burden off us as it relates to rates.
My only comment there is we'd have to confirm that, because the funds were for drainage and security, that they're finally being reimbursed, that we got to make sure we put the money in the right bucket.
Right. Yeah, that there's no question about that, but I want to make sure that I understand how much money it is and how much of the bucket it fills.
Okay.
All righty. Do we need to do any more here with this one? Any comments?
I don't know.
That case, we can go down to
hands raised, and I don't have any chat.
No hands? Or there is a hand?
No hands, no chats.
Okay, good. Then let's move to item 9, Tom. Get Leland paid here.
Excuse me. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hey, it's Crystal. I heard a lot of discussion with respect to the reserve study, and the engineering survey, but maybe I missed the discussion about the security RFP.
We're not there.
The timelines on.
We're not there yet.
Oh, I apologize. Then I'll jump back in later.
Hang on, we'll get there. okay, Tom, do 9, Leyland's money.
Okay, so I'm asking the committee, and maybe the board, as a matter of fact, to direct me to pay the amount of $27,907.80 to LH Schneider Construction for repair of the CIA ditch as it goes underneath Lone Pine Drive. We talked about the CIA as an organization earlier, and maintenance of the ditch is the number one thing that the CIA worries about. And we are 35.4% member of the CIA. So basically one third. And we were told when we were preparing the budget that the repair on this, I think it's about a 42 inch pipe or something like that, that goes underneath Lone Pine Drive right there by the Equestrian Center, was really needed to be done for fear that if the culvert pipe failed and erosion ensued, eventually I think you would see a road collapse or something like that, or the water would back up. And so this happened towards the end of the fiscal year, but because of COVID and the lack of traffic, they went ahead and did the work. And at the end of all is said and done, the portion that it belongs to the district, which is the width of the hole that had to be dug for the pipe, and then the pipe materials and the labor and the traffic control and repaving that section. And if you'll notice, they repaved it maybe a couple hundred yards, but we're only responsible for about 10 yards of the paving. And I have detailed receipts from Leland Schneider Construction and from the ranch who was part of this project, that I received them yesterday, but I believe the $27,907.80 is the correct amount. So my authority is $25,000. So if it was under $25,000, I would just approve it and spend it, just write a check. But since it's over, and I think it's a good that I have that limit, that if we go over that, you guys see it, that I wanted to bring it to the board for approval. And then in the meantime, because we were not able to get this onto the October board agenda, we kind of, and we're swamped, you know, I'm not gonna make that excuse all the time, but in this case, we didn't have enough time to really vet this correctly and get it to the board in October. So we're bringing it to the board in November, and they requested, the CIA, other two partners of the CIA requested that I write a check out of this account, the CIA trekking account, that had enough money to spend $13,500. So we kind of forwarded the money to Leland Construction in the amount of $13,500 a couple weeks ago. So make a short story short, long story short, the $14,407.80 is still due to LH Construction, and then LH Schneider Construction, and then the $13,500 needs to be put back into the CIA checking account, and that makes everything back to normal. And so based on any discussion you want to have, I believe this needs to go to the board as a packet item, and we'll just enhance this a little bit and put together a quick board report, and it'll be on the November 18th agenda. Discussion, anyone?
Any questions, discussion? It's pretty clear cut. I mean, we've been with this all the way through the construction, and we understood the problem, and you know, it was definitely needed to be done. We've seen the pipe that came out of there. So okay. You want to take us, Amelia, back to the agenda? And then page two, yeah. Security Service Opinion Survey, request for quote. Tom, you want to start with this?
Yes, we've been at this for a while. And when we did the budget this year, we put in there an amount of $30,000 or $35,000 to fund an analysis of security fees district wide, and this would be for all the types of properties that we assess security fees. And as time went on, it really became apparent that the cost of security far outweighs the amount of funding we received from the special tax that was approved in '98, which is known as Measure J. So through this process, it's become obvious that we need to either pay for security with the money we have, or we need to enhance the money we have available to security so we can pay for more services. Now, when I took over as general manager back in, you know, the March to June time period, I became aware that the security services were far outpacing the Measure J funds. And in large part, it was because the administrative overhead allocation, which we applied, was increased as a result of the cost allocation plan produced to the board in April, but also because our scheduling was such that we had a lot of patrol officers and sometimes an extra gate officer on duty for large parts of the day and the week, which creates a lot of budget constraints. The Measure J says, we need to provide 24 hours of a patrol officer and 24 hours a day of two gate officers. And so that requirement, that legal requirement, the voters approved in Measure J in 98, plus the fact that we have a lot of vacancies right now, is we basically are at minimum staff right now. We are 24/7 with a patrol officer and 24/7 two gate officers. And in the meantime, we're getting a lot of outcry from the community that we need to do more. And then there's all sorts of other information, real or not, or valid or not, that's going around. And so in my opinion, I was part of this in another job where security needed more funding. In this case, it was an entire police department, and they went out and they passed a Measure W, and they actually a few years later passed another measure to increase the sales tax to help fund the police department and the fire department in that city. So I thought this is a good idea at this point in time to redirect the review of the fees and have the money.
You there? Hello.
Tom, we've lost all audio. Are you still with us?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear us?
I can hear everybody. Raise their hand if they can hear.
Tom, we lost you when you were explaining Measure W.
Okay. I'll get back to there. So at a previous job, we did opinion polls, which resulted in a couple of measures that allowed the police and fire to continue being funded and being sustainable in an environment where it's hard to keep good staff on hand because everybody else is competitive. And in this case, I believe that it's best that we do this opinion poll, and a lot of people have heard about this. And the goal is to go through these phases that we're going to look at in a second and eventually come back to the board maybe in the spring with the results of the opinion poll. And the idea is you build a good poll, you conduct the poll, and the consultant who do this all the time, and we'll see how successful they are, because today's election, there'll be a lot of measures that pass by a close amount of votes, but the person who did the poll ahead of time is going to say, yep, that's pretty much right on spot, right on the number that we predicted after querying your citizens. And, you know, there's a lot of special districts that try to raise funds through this process. And if you do it right, you're successful most of the time. So the RFQ we've created, which is Exhibit A, is going to go through this process. Could you scroll up a little bit, Amelia? So we have the document complete and ready to release. We could release it this afternoon. So there's no more work to do on the document unless I get a lot of comments on it. So the hope is to release it basically this week and to get back the responses in November, and then to come to the Finance Committee in December with a recommendation where by December we award a contract. And then the stakeholder meetings, which will take place, and it's a major part of the RFQ, in January, and the polling services to be taken to take place in February. And then we come back in April, which gives us a little bit of time to process and reprocess everything in April to the Finance Committee, to go to the board in April. And then if in fact it makes sense that we could actually pass an initiative to increase the amount we pay for security, then maybe we go to the voters in June, maybe we go to the voters in July, whenever we choose to, as a special election item. And so the first step is to find out if we build it, you know, will they come, sort of scenario. If we put a referendum out there, what, if anything, will pass? And the best way to find out is to have a professional company go through phase 1, 2, and 3. And Amelia, if you could scroll up again, because I think there might be questions related to the phases. So phase 1 is planning and design. We hold kickoff meetings. We provide every survey that's ever been done to the vendor. And then they come in and they hold workshops and stakeholder and town hall or whatever they think is the best way to address getting the best information out to us. Develop a questionnaire, prepare a data collection instrument, identify the population and parameters, test the survey questionnaire. And then that's phase 1. And then phase 2, and this happens in, if I recall right, January. In February, we conduct the poll, and that's when you go through and you do the surveys by phone, online. And the idea, and this is very scientific, but the idea is you want to survey around 400 people in Rancho Marietta, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, and that'll come out through through the town hall meetings or the stakeholder meetings. And then they do the poll. So they make the calls and stuff. And along the way, they collect all the data. And then they come back in phase three, where they do their analysis. They do the, provide us with their findings, conclusions, and recommendations that results in a final report that comes to the board. And then the board at that point in time can decide if we want to proceed or if we want to reevaluate what our options are. And that's just in time for the budget process to be in full gear. So that is my report. If Amelia, you want to scroll down a little bit and kind of show some parts of the RFQ that it's ready to go. So that's that. We want to have responses back by 4 p.m. on the 25th of November. And I'm open to whatever else anybody wants to talk about right now.
Questions, I'm sure.
John, just real quickly, for myself, great work, Tom. I think the timelines are aggressive, but they're appropriate. Just a reminder to those people that either have an agenda or not, the district's obligated under the Measure J to be fiscally solvent with this, much like with drainage. And we're going to address that in the budgetary, but drainage isn't a topic people want to talk about. So really, we have two of the issues, Measure J and K, specifically have to be within the budgetary requirements, and that's what this board is going to do. So again, this isn't about level of service so much as it is we have to get our fiscal house in order. Once that's done, then we can start looking at really what are the options we have of levels of service that we have. I agree with the timelines that we have. So with that, John, you can open it up to input.
Yeah, and I think we've outlined this, or I've attempted at least to outline this as best I could, that the real issue here is a financial issue, first and foremost, because we're essentially propping up with property tax the security money that we raised through Measure J. It's a fair question to ask, was this what the folks who voted for Measure J back in 1998 really had in mind? But there's, at this point, about, I think, $407,000 that we take from our county allocation, our annual county allocation, to use to prop up the shortfall in security fees. And we just had a discussion on reserves. And I guess another fair question to ask is, should we be throwing all of this property tax allocation at security, or should we be rerouting it proportionately to water, sewer, and drainage, where the real infrastructure long-term costs we have are what we should be covering. And that's what this reserve study is essentially all about. So at this point, why don't we just see if there's any hands or questions. Amelia,
I don't have any hands raised and I don't have any chats. I have a hand raised.
Okay, let's do that.
Hi, I'd just like to point out one little inconsistency in here. The RFE talks about a survey of voters, whereas the memo talks about, you know, a poll will survey residents, landowners, and businesses, which are two different things. So I think you need to decide which is voters or residents, landowners, and businesses.
I'll thank you, Richard. That's a very good point. We'll fix that.
And one of the things that as part of this stakeholder process that we have to address is that we have revenue that's generated from both a commercial and non-residential entity as well as a residential entity. And we need to, the only way we can address the inequities on the non-residential side is to make adjustments in a new referendum. So I get it, and that's a valid point that Richard makes, that there's a distinction between, you know, the voting entity and the commercial entity. We need to fix the whole problem. So some of that end game here is really comes out of those stakeholder meetings, because we have two sets of ratepayers, and their expectations and their needs are distinctly different. And what we're doing in some cases now, the way we're billing and the amount we're billing into the commercial entities really isn't right. So it all needs to get fixed.
You know, John, if I could comment, the intent, now that I've had a chance to think about it, we can only poll the voters, because they're the ones who are going to vote.
That's correct.
But when we do our stakeholder workshops, we need to include those non-voting entities, like the commercial properties, like the undeveloped land properties, because that's what Measure J has us providing security for today. And just like you said, those properties get addressed as the measure is being, if we go forward, is being proposed. So I just wanted to get back to Richard's question to clarify. We poll the voters, but we work with everybody out here to establish what we think we're going to poll the voters about.
Any more hands, Amelia? Anything else going on?
I'm on the phone, but I'm not, I don't have the ability to raise my hand.
Well, then that's okay. Who are we speaking to?
This is Crystal. Hi, John. So one point of clarification for me is that the issue is paying for security based on the allocations. Measure J was just supposed to pay for the two gate guards and patrol. And Measure J is paying for that. There may be a small delta, but the issue is how to pay for the administrative overhead. And I think that's one clarification that's really important for everybody to know. It's not that the cost of the actual services in Measure J is what's gone up. It's the allocation report that was done within the last year, and I think that should be clarified to people.
Yeah, I get your point, and what you're right. It appears to me that there was no real consideration for administrative overhead. It basically, if you look at the way Jay is written, and in the comment sheets that went to the public and in the consultant's report, and from that has arisen our problem, in that we have realistic admin expenses that we have to distribute amongst water, sewer, drainage, and security. Securities has been underfunded for many, many, many years. It's rotated between, and I have no idea why, between 20% and 21.5%. And realistically, when we paid for the professional analysis to determine it, it came up at about 31.5, which is pretty reasonable when you take the 2 million, I'm rounding these numbers, you take the 2 million that we pay for security, and this includes the overhead numbers, against the 7 million that we pay for CSD's budgetary needs completely, which also includes the administrative allocation, that 2/7 is about 28.5%. And realistically, the consultant came up with 31.5, which is not too far off. And I think anybody who spends any time around here will tell you that, you know, security is eating up a heck of a lot of overhead just from the amount of time that the management personnel are forced to spend on it. So realistically, I think the numbers are right. So now it's a matter of going out and trying to get the money we need to pay for them.
John, I concur. And again, I, without the administrative costs, and Measure J, I think, is very clear, the cost of security, what the intent was and what we have today might be two different things, but we are not going to have two gate officers and a patrol officer 24/7 without the administrative services that, that go with it. It's just like we can't have drainage, sewer, or water supply or water demand. So it's not really an opinion of, well, that's not what Measure J talks about. It's what are the costs for security? And it's all encumbersome from that standpoint. And that's the point of the board. And that's the direction the board's going to go. I think this is the venue or the vehicle to take it, Tom. Again, timelines are pretty aggressive, but this is a issue that we got to get moving forward because we've got a fiscal deadline coming forward. So I think the product looks very good. Run through the steps again, Tom. We'll obviously talk about it briefly at security as an FYI, and then it goes to the board as an action item.
What? Yeah, let me, the steps are release the RFP, bring it back to the finance committee in December, take it to the board in December, start the work in January, conduct the poll, and it's not in front of me anymore, Amelia, but I think we conduct the poll in February and we get reports done in March and April, back to the board in April. And I want to talk about the urgency. The capacity of people who do opinion polls is just about to become unlimited because all the people involved in elections are not going to be doing elections for the next few months. They're all going to be freed up. So I'm very confident we can make this happen. I've seen it happen before. These companies are professional. They do it all the time. And in general, they're spot on. Very seldom do they lose elections that they tell you should run.
Yeah, I agree with that, Tom. And one of the things that we've, you know, it takes us out of the process. I mean, I want us to come out of this as being seen as objective. And I don't want in any way, shape, or form for our board to be accused of trying to influence or steer the results of the poll. You know, I've made the statement to a few residents that, you know, if it becomes clear to us that you want us to build you the Alamo, you know, as long as you're willing to vote for the money to do it, I guess we can figure out how to build you the Alamo. So I want to stay as objective and unbiased as we can as a board. And I think doing this, letting the consultant control the process, okay, making sure we understand what it is the public wants from security and what questions we should ask. But beyond that, you know, I don't want anything to do with it.
Well, John, and I think, thank you for that. I think it's important to say that this is the first step. If we decide in April to proceed, it's going to include a price tag. And the price tag is an estimated 40 to 80,000 by the registrar of voters to conduct a special election and a marketing campaign to make sure that the message is clear and delivered in a way that the voters will be consistent to what they were polled that they would say they would do. So if you don't do a marketing campaign, the answers they gave in February may not be the same answers that they give in June. And that's where you would fail on your referendum if you don't do a proper campaign. And I don't think a marketing campaign here in Rancho Marietta would be so expensive from doing the campaign, but creativity and accuracy in the message would need to be applied correctly. And to do that, we would hire a firm that works in conjunction with the polling firm or is used to taking the polling firm's information and turning it into the marketing campaign for the voters to be receiving. So it's not free to go to do a special election. That's why we spend this money now to find out if it's really going to be successful. If not, we got to go back to the drawing board, which is fine too.
Yeah, if the results of the poll, and understand that going through this process, we're looking for 67% to confirm it, that if the polls tell us that, 40% of the folks that live here want us to spend more money, then you're right. It's another conversation, because, this number has five zeros in it, and you don't want to spend it on something that's guaranteed to fail. So the poll in itself is expensive, but it is in relevance to what the actual bill will be to get this thing on a ballot. It's money well spent, in my opinion.
Well, and the other thing, and I don't want to beat this to death, but the other thing is, if the poll turns out that what everybody wants to do would generate a 55% approval rating, then you have, and I don't really understand this option very well just yet because I haven't seen it happen, but you could do a grassroots campaign where a group of the citizens can go out there and get a bunch of signatures and somehow put it on a ballot, put it on a special election, and come up with the money to make it happen. But if we can only get 55% to approve what everybody thinks they want, then that, I think, is another alternative. And I think you might know more about that than I do by now.
Yeah, I spent some time with some folks at the county who do this, not the county, the state, I'm sorry. And yeah, there is an alternative that comes through initiative. The initiative can be board directed, or the initiative can be resident directed. And there are nuances to each, but I think for starters, let's start here and go through the stakeholder process and see where it takes us.
Okay.
Tim, anything further?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay.
This is Amelia. I do have one hand raised, if you would like to proceed, Richard.
Sure, go ahead.
Yes, back on that graph of expenses on revenue you had up a few minutes ago, I'm assuming that revenue includes property tax out, the property tax that is propping up?
Correct.
Okay. Yes.
I find that very misleading. What that graph should be showing is, expenses versus Proposition J money. And that would really show, the shortfall of the revenue. And I mean, that's one of the things you really need to be showing people. But I'll let you do what you want. Another little comment. I think you really need to address Crystal's concern about the allocation of administrative costs. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, and you answered it, but I don't think you going to be convincing her. I mean, I'm no accountant. I have a little bit of financial experience, but to me, those administrative costs really unquestionably are part of the costs of security. But I don't think you're convincing anybody with your answers. And I think you need to do a little more work with that. Or people are going to be complaining about it. People aren't going to accept it. So that's the end of my comment.
Okay. Amelia, anything else?
No, I don't have any other hands raised, and I don't have any chats.
Okay, well, we can move on. I think, are we down to comments? Is that it?
I have a comment, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
We are planning to close early on Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, close district's offices early, and we will post that as we did last year for the day before Thanksgiving and the day before Christmas. And I just want to put that out in a public comment.
I think that's okay. Tim, you have anything?
No, I'm good. Staff, thank you.
Yeah, thanks everybody for your help. Is there any other staff comments that anybody on the line?
No comment.
Anybody? No?
No other comments.
Okay. Then I guess we can move to adjourn item 12. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good day.